This episode of Finding Demo Surfishing is being brought to you by Ninja Tackle. NinjaTackleVA.com is the website to go take a look at, and you can get your hands on some excellent rods, reels, rigs, bait, you name it, he's got it in there. I love the rods that Matt has, those Ninja Dagger series from the 7-footer all the way up to the 13. I don't have the 13 yet. I'm not a fan of 13s, maybe because of before, but we'll see. Maybe that'll change my mind. But everything I've heard about it, phenomenal rod. No one has told me anything bad about it. So if you like the longs, he's got you covered there. The 7-footer, the travel rod, I love that. It's in the car with me. If I see a little stream or something on the side of the road and I want to get after it, hey, I can. But always good rods, always good rigs, great customer service. He's going to take care of you. Good stuff. NinjaTackleVA.com. Go take a look. Get your order in today. Hello to all you happy people. Hope you're doing well wherever you are and things are going phenomenal for you. The fishing is top notch, and one of the episodes you've listened to recently has helped you in some way, shape, or form. Take out there and catch those fish that you've been trying to get your hands on. It's coming up on that great time of year for fishing. It is just gonna be lights out time. I can't wait. So hopefully you're doing well and kicking it and getting there. This week we're taking the digital car. I think that's better. Yeah, we're not taking the plane. We're actually going right up the road from me here. And unfortunately, I couldn't go on site because my work schedule is just kicking me in the teeth every time I think I'm going to be able to do some other travel pieces. But we're heading up to Pensacola, and we're going to be talking with a guy that I met by weird happenstance working on his RV. He called in, needed something repaired, and I was like, yeah, I'll go. Pensacola is my area. Went up there. Next thing I know, I come up there, and he's like, yeah, I'm building a brewery. I was like, what? Here? The Rock Place? Oh, cool. And that was, a little over a year ago. Well, it was more than a year ago, actually. Now that I think about it, I'm not good with my timelines. And I have been fortunate enough to watch as he has built this monster. It has turned into something amazing. It's grown more than just a brewery, and it's going to continue to grow more. So without further ado, me flapping my jibs the entire time, Gary, welcome to the show of Warrior Beer Company. It's good to have you on here, man.
Glad to be on here, buddy, man. This has been a long time coming. We've talked about it for a long time, and
over a year.
On a correction note, it's been over 2 years, just around 2 years when I moved down here in January. Oh. January of 2021, 22.
Holy
crap. I came down in November of 21 to look at buying another brewery in downtown, and then, found this place, and my partners and I were able to make this purchase. But that happened in January of 22. And so you were here shortly after that, cause I had to bring my RV down, and yeah. I didn't know, cause I bought it from my cousin and he didn't take care of it. So, found somebody that could take care of and do a once over and make sure I didn't blow up when I put the propane on for the first time. So,
and that repair was easy. It was like, yeah, hey, this little leak here, we're good. We're good.
Yeah.
Dude, it's really been two. Oh my God.
2 years.
Oh. See, that's why you blink and you're like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. No, it's not.
Well, the problem is while we're fishing, if that same timeline's kind of went along, we'd probably catch a lot of fish, but we sit there for a long time and just wait and wait and wait. But if fishing went this fast as our life does sometimes, I'm sure we'd have coolers all the time.
But. Oh, definitely. For sure. But it has grown, man. You have done some amazing work. You and your team have put it all together. It is almost go time. I mean, it's what, April 3rd is the opening. It's next. Hell, that's a couple weeks from now. You're rolling.
Yeah, we had a little bit of setback. We were planning on kind of being open in March, and I lost one of my partners to pancreatic cancer about a month ago, and it kind of put a little halt on our getting open. We just had to kind of redirect, and I think we're back on track now. And obviously, losing somebody that believed in a vision and a mission as a friend, you know, it's been really tough. And, but I, his son, it was a father son, Joe and Joey, and the son's still, him and I are still partners. We're going to move this thing across the line and make dad proud of what he helped start. So.
You got a lot of things going with this brewery. It's not just a brewery. This has,
yeah,
I mean, this has so many third, fourth, fifth ripple effect and plans all put together that are phenomenal. I mean, there's no other better word for it. But what I don't want to do, we're not going to steal that one yet. We're going to save
We're not going to go there yet. Let's talk about the thing, mission.
Let's talk mission first, and then we're going to get into the mission because, you, again, the mission is so cool, and I completely understand why you're doing it, and I'm excited for it. So let's start at the beginning. Tell us your story and what got you into fishing.
Yeah. So, I'd like to say I moved down here a couple years ago with the vision of doing this, but my life started in Maryland. I lived just outside of in a border town called Tacoma Park, just in the DC line. Part of Tacoma Park's in DC, part of it's in Montgomery County, Maryland. That's where I was born and raised. A couple years I lived in Montana, which we can go into, where my dad was from. But then we quickly went back to the area that, you know, is have an abundance of construction work. So my family has been in construction. I was a builder developer for 30 plus years back home. My dad was construction. My grandfather was plumbing. We all have service baselines. But fishing started, I guess, initially probably started on Chesapeake Bay. And my mom's aunt had a place called Duffy's Tavern that was in Point Lookout, Maryland. And at that time, my mom would go down and help on the weekends. That's how they met my dad. Then I came about based on that interaction. But we still spent a lot of time down there at Duffy's Tavern. It was a little rougher place. It was directly on the water, and my dad built a big deck and dock out over the water. But there was a rougher crowd that would show up that loved to throw hands, and my Aunt Peggy didn't take a lot, so there was a lot of pool sticks and pool cues flying around. But it was a fun place, and growing up being right there and crabbing and fishing right off the, you know, the deck that my dad built was kind of how it started. As I got older, I'll track back into my 7, 8, 9 year old life. I would like to say I was in Montana. So that was a whole different type of fishing. Got to go do a lot of fly fishing up in the creeks, up in the mountains. We were actually in the Bitterroot Valley, which is at the base of the Rockies to the west, and the Bitterroots are to the east, just south of Missoula. And got to do a lot of fishing with my dad up in the mountains there with flies that my grandfather tied, and the old wicker basket that you put your fish in, and the little cloth folder to put all your flies in. And, you know, it was just a good time when you're a kid to be able to do stuff like that and kind of get to be out in nature. And interesting story there that I'll bring up. My as 8-year-old, about 45-pound kid, and found my dad, who was, you know, Vietnam Navy guy, lanky, 5'10", you know, won all the forearm wrestling arm wrestling contests in the Navy, but he had a little fiery spirit to him, but he'd always have a gun. We always had to go with a gun up the mountain because he said, you never know what you're going to run into. And we turned the corner this one particular time, and we came against the old mama bear. Mama bear stood up, and she was about 9 foot tall, Miss Mama Grizzly. And my dad just plugged her about 6 times, then had to reload, and she just stayed there. And then finally, a couple cubs went behind her and went on in down the bank, and she turned around, dropped, and ran down the hill. That was probably one of the scariest moments when you were thinking you were just going to go fishing.
Uh-huh.
It was a pretty cool experience as I look back of, you know, the bravery and, you know, the honor that my dad would cover down or whatever he had to do to protect. But it was definitely an interesting time. But after that, just back to Maryland. Parents separated when I was young. My dad ended up getting a boat and put a boat down in Solomon's Island off of the bay. And every weekend I would get together with him, and we did a lot of trolling for blues and rock. That's what you catch in the bay. So that's sort of my initial start of fishing. There's another interesting story we'll talk about from a buddy of mine. Dad's had a charter boat out of Virginia Beach, and that's probably my most interesting story.
Go for it. You're on a roll.
All right. Well, so in about that same time frame, I guess it was probably 12, 13, my dad said, hey, we're going to go deep sea fishing. First time I ever went deep sea fishing. We go down to Virginia Beach, get on my dad's 63 or 65. That's huge. You know, it's got 3-4 tower. I don't know how many towers. I don't know why you need to be up that high, because when the waves are 8-10 feet, you know, I don't even know how you stand up there. But you do, I guess. But we went out and we were fishing one of the drops. And got my first tuna, you know, and locked me in the chair, you know, and I'm, you know, at that point I was still only probably about 80 pounds, and I'm rocking back and forth, working it out for, I think, an hour. And they finally said, hey, it's right at the boat. It's right at the boat, you know, and you can't see. Obviously, I'm in the chair and they got the high back, so I can't see. And they're like, it's right here, just keep working, keep working. And then all of a sudden I feel the line go. And I'm like, they keep reeling. I reel, and here comes about this much of the tuna. A shark had come up out of the water. It bit my tuna. Pretty much 90% of it was gone. So I got a head of a tuna that day. But
that counts.
It counts, I guess. It was a big one. I'm telling you, it was really big. It was probably 200-pound tuna, though.
Sharks are, I mean, between sharks and the air breathing butthole known as a dolphin, they'll happily take your food from you.
Yeah.
Well, it's damn Montana. So you and old forgotten angler, Larry Grossman, you guys, you guys have chewed into some of the same areas, it sounds like.
Yeah. It was funny. Cause, you know, I haven't got delved into all of Larry's background and understand, but you know, with him being up and down that same river baselines and, you know, all the feeders from where we're at obviously went down into the Colorado, and I know that he fished up in that area. But, you know, fly fishing, it's so unique in the aspect of what it is, you know, because the precision of just kind of just feeling, you know, I'm a pretty good golfer and I played very competitive golf, and you don't get to be a good golfer until you have feel. And I believe that, you know, when it comes to fly fishing, it's truly that, like, the gift is in the feel and just being able to get that line, you know, precisely in that 3 or 4 inch area that you're trying to hit to catch that pool or the lap, you know. And I just, but the other part of that I know, because back home I used to work with a group that helped veterans called Project Open Waters, and in that they took guys out fly fishing. And one of my really good friends who had pretty severe injury, RPG, took off his face, 56 surgeries later, 3 times to death and back. He was part of that program. And it was very healing for him to just sit or stand on the side of a bank and cast, whether he caught a fish or not. When he initially did that, and his description of how clear his mind became and how quiet it became was how I remembered when I was growing up back in Montana doing that same thing. Cause fishing, most other fishing is busy. You know, I don't know that you take in everything that there is, unless, you know, you're backwater canoeing. You know, I see Larry, like you say, he's posted pictures and he's got a beautiful spot where he's at. But unless you're kind of doing that and you're on your own and you're in that quiet space, I don't know that you catch the same effect. You know, you're on the, even when you're on the shore, you know, there's waves crashing, there's, you know, people getting in your lines. And I mean, there's stuff going on. When you're out on a boat, you know, whether you're moving, you're usually with people. Fly fishing just kind of gets to that peace moment. So if I looked at what I would like to do more is hang out with Larry and do some fly fishing down here and some back cuts, just to bring some peace time. So.
I don't see him saying no.
I don't see him saying no if fishy is involved, period.
Exactly. You say that and Larry's like, yeah, I can do that. Yeah. Larry's a great dude. I absolutely love him. I was very fortunate he came on the show. That was such a wealth of knowledge. And then watching him continue the things that he does. He's been a lifelong angler, and here he is here just showing what he does and just rocking it in all his areas. So he's been doing good stuff. Yeah. So you talked about the past there. Now let's talk about here. What type of fishing do you like to do? I mean, fly fishing, we got that. Is there any other fishing you like to do?
Well, so the interesting part, how this really kind of evolved outside of how I met you, I said, well, it's going to take a little bit of time for me to get this brewery thing moving as we go through permitting. And I can't just stand around and sit around. I played a lot of golf that first year trying to get to meet people down here. But I said, I'm going to start walking the beach on the mornings just to have a little God time. It's my God time. I'm going to go.
I remember that.
Put on my music, I'm going to try to get a little bit of shape. So I'm going to listen to a song. I'm going to take off running. And when I'm tired, I'm going to walk out the rest of the song. And I'm going to go through this process of just getting back to, some peace in myself. And one of those mornings, I met Blaine surf fishing. And we got to talking. And, a couple hours later, coming back from his background and then sharing my testimony and kind of walking through where mental health is and, why he's doing what he's doing and how he wanted to get back and surf fishing became an outlet for him. And he knew it could be an outlet for others. And voila, he's got his great business. And, we have these tournaments because he has passion. But that kind of got me into surf fishing. And it was literally, I think it was like February. It was pretty soon after I got here. It was like February because he was like, hey, they actually have this sale out in, they have a sale at Outcast every year and they liquidate all this stuff. He said, if you really want to get into it, you need to go down there and check it out. So I said, all right, I'll go down there, a couple $100 and, get me a pole, get me some gear, I'll be ready. Well, like $650 later, I got three poles, I got sinkers, all right, I'm a surf fisher now, I guess. So here we go. And that kind of started, a passion that same thing, just getting up early in the morning, throwing a couple poles out, having my God time and then of course now following, podcasts, listen to you guys on Fridays and learning as much as I can. And now I'm fishing down in Navarre. I'm fishing down in 30A. I'm living over in Fort Morgan. We fish there every, couple evenings, we catch the last, but now it's moved to this time frame. I get to catch a couple more hours when I get over there, but that's, so I do have a passion now for surf fishing. Haven't gone out to do any deep sea fishing. We got amazing deep sea fishing out here or deep Gulf fishing. I don't technically call it a sea. We're in the Gulf, but I think this year I'm going to be doing that. I have some friends that have offered to take me out and hit the drop or even just hit some of the, where they drop the bridge. So, that's only 10, 12 miles out. They said, so I'm interested and excited to do that, but that kind of bring back my growing up on my dad's, 43 foot Chris Craft that we had to take out every year and scratch off all the barnacles and redo the wood and, love fiberglass boats.
They're a little easier.
Yeah.
A little bit more forgiving. All right. Last question in this one. We'll move into the next category here. What has been your favorite fishing memory?
Yeah. I mean, I guess from early on, there's probably two right now that kind of highlight where I'm at. One from growing up and being able to catch that tuna and then not quite get all of it, but just the experience of seeing power. When you're out in the middle of the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, and there's nothing around and a big shark comes up, it's a pretty intimidating point that you can be in, especially on the back ends of Jaws. Like I'm 53 years old, Jaws is like right in your face at that point, So that, and then, last year in the fall tournament here, I caught a really big permit, and it was weird because I hadn't seen anybody catching permits all year round. Nobody was really talking about it. And during that tournament, I don't know, permits were, I mean, it was almost like we need a new category. There was just as many permits called, it seems like, as there were pompano. So that was pretty cool because there's some fish that I haven't caught here yet. I haven't caught a sheep's head. You know, I want a sheep's head because everybody's like, everybody, you know, sheephead's the best food, fish here. They're going to have to really change my mind because I love my pompano. I mean, the way I prepare my pompano, that's going to be my fish. If I have pompano, that's what we're getting. But I'm interested in having sheep's head and fresh fish is the best way. I mean, I'm not going to go buy it at the market. I'm going to catch my fish and I'm going to enjoy it, you know, from catching it and putting it right in the, you know, in the fridge or the freezer, right in the hot plate, you know, that day. So.
Mm-hmm. And sheep's good. It's a good fish. Okay. I can't say it's better or worse than pompous. It's a good fish.
Yeah.
So everyone's favorite.
What's your favorite fish though?
Nowadays, oof.
to catch and eat, because I think obviously we can go into another whole category. But
yeah, I mean, catching and eating wise, palm's great. Don't get me wrong, whiting is up there. People will think I'm an idiot, but I'll say bluefish. Absolutely love bluefish, man. After learning to cut out the dark meat on bluefish and doing and also following the Gajime process, it has changed my mind. Bluefish has been a fun one. So, but yeah, that's about where I'm playing nowadays. But I'm looking forward to this spring because I can't wait to get my hands on some of these other fish. Permit's good. Permit shocked me. It's very pompano-esque. I mean, they're the same family. Say,
it's very similar. Not quite the same, but very similar. You know, it's funny because last year, the lady Anna that I've been dating has a 9-year-old son. And, you know, he's an outdoorsy and a good singer, Lil Jay. I love him. So we've been doing a lot of fishing together. And we went on a hit where we both caught some pretty good sized blues. I think mine was 20, 22, 24 inches. His was very, very close to it. So we had blue. We took home and had blue. And like you said, I didn't bleed it, but we immediately took it home and prepared it like I would. And it's funny because the blue, everybody said, that's the same blue you have up home. And I'm like, well, it's not the same blue, but I guess it technically is, except this blue is all fancy in color. And our blue is like a muckfish in the way that it, you know, the way that it shines. We got the nice blue, sharp blue line on the top and the nice silvery look to it. And a little bit of yellow might show up here and there. Back home, it's just like, it's just a dark, dark blue fish, but they get a lot bigger back there, you know, and in the Bay, you know, we could have 38, 40 inch blues.
East
of them in the Rock, you know, is what everybody wants up there. And I actually, the way that my dad used to prepare the blue and the way that I was taught to prepare blue back home, I like that better than the Rock. And everybody wanted, you know, the Rockfish they had limited seasons, you know, because of how much they've been harvested up there. But we would troll and, you know, catch 20, 30 blue and we would be good because we knew how dad showed us how to prepare them. So I'm with you. I like the blue. I didn't like the blue that I had down here as much though. So I don't know if maybe it's the salt content, you know, where the fish is, changes the taste of it based on what they eat. And then, like I said, I think the salt of the water itself obviously adds to it.
Yeah. When East Coasters see us catch bluefish down here, they're like, oh, I'll put that baby back. Yeah. It's like, that's a big one down here. Sorry, we don't have your normal monsters that you guys have.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're good. It's a good fish. All right, well, we're going to move into the next category here. But before we do that, it's been 23 minutes, everybody. That means you should have checked your bait by now. So if you haven't done so, reel it in, because that's what you're listening. You're listening to this on the beach. And if you're not there, you're mentally there, because that's where you need to be, right there. This bait check is being brought to you by DS Custom Tackle. DSCustomTackle.com is the website. Go on over there and take a look. As you can see, it is jam-packed full of gear. Yeah, if you need some stuff, yeah, I think you're covered here. If you need rigs, look at this. There are so many in the shop. You need to get your hands on anything from drums. Look at that. Kings, pomps down here, perch. It's not just Florida. This has got you covered up and down the East Coast and the West Coast. It doesn't matter where it is. You're all set up there. if you're a rig maker and you're looking to get your hands on beads, floats, things of that nature, hey, look at that. Tons of beads right here, and the floats is in another section. There is a bunch. The Scullies. Get the Scullies. Yeah. DSCustomTackle.com. Go take a look. Get your order in today. Great product, great people, and they're doing great things. You've had a, quite an adventure starting when it comes to the fishing coming down here. You've had the good change from the Chesapeake Bay, the East Coast. You've done fly fishing. Now you've come down here and you've been successful. You're doing great things with it. You're having a lot of fun doing it. We've talked offline several times about that. So let's talk about actually going out. Now, how do you plan your fishing trips?
Well, I don't, you know, the one thing I can't wait till I get my Deerfield cart, because I seem to take a lot more stuff than I probably need. You know, I watch Larry do it. I watch Blaine do it, where they can just throw a pack, grab a, you know, grab their pole, and they're out doing something. And I don't know, for me, when I go out, it's like, okay, well, first of all, I'm going to go get me some fresh bait. You know, I'm going to have my normal tackle that I like to have. But then with having Little J around, we both have to have, you know, he can't be in my tackle box. I can't be in his tackle box. So we both have our tackle box. We have our cooler. You know, the cooler's got, you know, now it's got a little bit of our own beer in it. Got some little pop for him and some water. But, you know, then I take, you know, I only have one really, really good rod. I do have one of the 12-foot over. Yeah. And that's probably my favorite pole when it goes over, long fishing.
Over Mark's rods, over the bar?
Yeah.
Over the good bar. Rods.
Yeah. So I have one of those. The others are the ones that I bought, still kicking. Now this year I'm going to have to upgrade because some of them, the reels are coming apart a little bit, but I bought 3 pin rods from Outcast a couple years ago. And, you know, the worst part is my life is so busy that I don't get as snobby about fishing. I need a pole to put it out in the water and bring me a fish in. So then it's really about the bait. And I've been using fish bites and fish gum. I love using, you know, you start hanging around enough people and you go fishing with them, you learn the secrets, because nobody tells their secrets, but if you're with them, they're just there. But, you know, the using the sand fleas at certain times and in certain areas, obviously everybody shrimps a little different on their hook. You know, there's the way you do it, but then there's the way the guys that catch fish do it. So I've been trying to learn those techniques. I'm interested in some of this soaked bait. I still don't understand all the soaking bait scenario. You know,
are you talking
these big pompano winners are always have soaked bait. So I don't know all the secrets there. I need to go fishing with some of those guys a little bit more. But you guys down in the bar, I don't get down there all the time to hang out with you.
Not saying this is a secret, but it's a lesser known one, and I'll throw it out there because, well, whatever. Never be worried. Don't walk away from fish finder rigs and Carolina rigs.
I'm
not saying I've been trying to pay attention to somebody, aka Sid. I can't wait till he comes back. Sid's a hell of a dude. Gone for a while. Yeah, Sid caught not this past tournament, but the one before when we were out in the parking lot, the first round. Okay. Sid caught two monsters. You think he won three tournaments with them? Sid's a hell of an angler. Absolute hell of an angler. And he wouldn't give me the secrets, but he did say some stuff that made me go, oh. All right, without saying, I know what I got an idea of what you were doing.
Yeah. Well, I think last year, my hits at the permit came, you know, I got one of Chip's rigs and used it. And his moving float in the color, I mean, like literally the only poles that were getting hit were the two that I had those on. But the green Gidim is what I mean, from the spring tournament, like you said, I happened to get one of those nice, great raffles that had, you know, maybe quite a few packs of those. And so that had been my mainstay of my rigging. And they hit all the time. You know, a couple of them I changed and went to some, you know, fluorescent floats in between the green beads in there just to try to, and it didn't pick up as much. All right, so that's gone. We're back to just the green. But I think that was probably my most success is using his. And when I first got down here, I was using Friskies because going over here and to tackle shop and getting my gear from the beginning, Friskies is like right there. It's like, all right, well, that's what I need. I need those double drop rigs right there. Everybody talks about the Carolina rigs, but you got to get the pompano rig because you need, multiple fish fighting you at one time. You can't just fight one fish. So,
yeah. The green get'ems, great stuff. I have a bag of green rig beads hiding purposefully on that one. And yeah, James makes great stuff over there. Always good. And it's always good to see those guys. All right. So you that's your plan. All right. Now let's talk about spots. So you're at the beach and you're looking for your spot. What are you looking for?
Well, the best thing you need to do is make sure you have a good set of glasses. And, I did learn from Blaine and scouting the areas over here because, I'm limited in a lot of my travel. I go down maybe – I don't even get to Navarre. I go to, like, Dog Beach over there, and that's about as far south or far east as I get from over here just by travel and trying to get enough fishing time in right now.
Time matters.
I really try to catch. Obviously, you're covering down on the sandbar, but you're looking at the returns. And so I'm always looking for the returns and trying to catch those pulls off of the returns. And, I forget what one of the apps I use, Fish Finder, or one of them that, where they're up to date when you pay for their app. They're pretty up to date and you can get the arrow of the pools. And so I've been kind of trying to track back. And again, seasonal times change also. I mean, right now that it's cold, trying to find those little bit deeper pools and a little bit more movement across them. So over here in Perdido and moving up through Orange Beach, I have a couple of spots that I like going to. But even, they started this whole beach replenishment that started up in Gulf Shores and kind of started moving down this way, and it changed the beach, and it changed those pools. Even Johnson Beach, when they brought sand in last year, it changed the pools. And then this spring, where they had brought that sand in, actually created some pretty good cuts. It's an ever-changing sand line, and the pools are created obviously because of that. And we get storms, it doesn't have to be a big storm, and it changes those pools. So I'm looking for flow points and I'm looking to try to catch those pools on the returns. And that's where I've had probably the most success.
That's solid piece right there. Always good. And you're right. Glasses makes a big difference. So you can see through that water. Yeah. So now you're there and we got your gear set up. So you talked about one piece of it. Now, how many rods are you fishing and kind of where are you throwing them to? How do you cast out? What are you looking to do?
Yeah. So I Blaine was a great teacher from the beginning, kind of helping me look, don't set all your rods at 60 yards, stagger them, work them, separate, and hey, we don't need them 10 feet. Move your poles down. Stop. Go down there. You're too close to me. But, spacing, trying to figure out in each one of those cuts, trying to catch and cover those areas. I have, because I do have a couple of the longer poles that I can get out. And once the water's warmer, obviously you can walk a little bit out. And if I'm trying to get out, to 200, 300, I have to walk. I'm not chip tall, chip strong, so I can't throw 300 yards, off my back foot. So I have to move out. But I kind of work out, and then I set my shorter poles in those pools and just, I try to stage them and stagger them in that aspect. But usually if Little Jay's with me, we'd normally have five or six out. If it's just me, I watched the video that I think Larry and them posted the other day down to one pole because you're just getting hammered, So it's, again, you put them out there, but I've watched too many fish get gone because you have too many poles out if they're running, and especially when the whiting are running last year. I mean, just put a pole in, you're only going to be able to handle one or you're going to miss all your fish. So I, It's usually between, you know, two minimum. I always have two because I always try to set one a little bit long and set one in. And then, but it could be up to six if I got little Jay with me.
Yeah. When the run happens, yeah. It's funny how you start at four and you're down to one or two.
Yeah. Now, I do keep a seven. I got like a, just a little ugly stick that I got at Walmart, you know, when I first got down here. And I go throw that and I usually just put some kind of spinner bait on it and kind of run, you know, when it's quiet, I'm just trying to run to see if I can pick anything up and try different jigs, you know, see what they do. You know, everybody's like, you know, why do you use jigs out on the surf? I mean, I don't know, but I use jigs and rigs all my life. And you know, I wouldn't use, somebody said, and I don't know if anybody does it, but back home we use spoons everywhere, you know, and obviously you're trolling, you're using different spoons. Like, you ever thrown a spoon in surf? And I said, I don't know. I see that as back home when you have a heavy surf, like the Atlantic has a really heavy surf pretty much all the time, that the spoon gives more light reflection. Plus the water's dirty as shit. So, you know, down here we have clear water. I'm like, I just want something bright and just let it drop out there. Those fancy fish are going to come eat it. But back there, you got to throw a spoon out to get them some charge and have some light bouncing. So, I don't know.
Spoons work great here, man. I've thrown spoons, nailed blues, Spanish. Throwing metal here it's one thing that not every surf angler does. I know that. And the few that I do get to hang out with, you know, like Justin always, and he's the reason I do this. Anytime we went out, he always had one rod set up for metal. Always had a lure. And I was like, dude, why are you throwing lures, man? We're just here to relax. Yeah. And then he starts catching fish. And I'm like, man, why did I forget that lure rod? So now I don't leave the house without my lure rod. And we'll have our rod set up and then we'll be walking down the beach and we'll be casting and going after other fish because the predators, they're not the pelagic world. The meat eaters, they're going to go after something shiny and attack it. Whereas, you know, they're not always going to hit your set rig. They're going to meh. And you know they want to charge after their meal. Yeah. So throwing metal's totally smart, dude.
Good. But that's last year I had a run. I went over to PB just east of PB, and the mackerel run. You know the dolphins are the max running, and I'm like, all right, here we go. You know, and it's like so much fun because it's like, but I used mine just went blank. But the fake bait that. Forget who was putting them together, but they're like have pink line, green line, blue line, and they're little 2.5s, 3s that he brought to one of the tournament. I bought
ES lures.
Yeah. I bought three or four of those. And then actually in the November I bought a couple more because you know they start to get chipped up a little bit when they get hit. But those, I mean, they were phenomenal. You throw them out there, the max were on them, you know, and they get the you got the double tri hook. So you know, go after it, big boy. I'm going to get you. And they're one of the best fighting fish in that close. I mean, because they're literally 15 yards off, but somehow it takes you, you know, 5-10 minutes to get them in because they just run.
Yeah, yeah, they're good fighters. Well, the other side of that too is, what do you do when you go fishing in a new place you've never been before?
You know, I kind of go through my same routine of I start with always if I'm taking live bait or I'm trying to get me some sand fleas, trying to bait with that. And then I'm always tipping it with either fish bites or fish gum. And I just start with looking for that cut. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to set one short. I'm going to set one to the back of it and see, you know, how that's going. And I don't know, you know, when it comes to new spots, I'm like an old dog. If I find like I got like five or six spots I go. Like if I'm going out to my yard and I was a dog, I'm going to piss in the same five or six spots. So yeah. I know my five or six spots. And if something's not hitting, then I'm going to go to spot number two. I'm a good number. So I haven't had the luxury to go explore a lot of spots. Because it seems like sometimes when I go and Fort Morgan, I don't know as much. But since I've been living out there, you know, I've been trying to find spots. And a lot of times it has relationship with Anna. She has a big cleaning and maintenance business out there. So a lot of the condos and houses that she has, I go use their backyard for my fishing spots. And but I really haven't found, because over Fort Morgan, it's very shallow. You know, they get, it's like a long run to get to where you need to be. So again, over there, you know, if I'm using lures, that's probably a good spot. I could just, if I see fish running, but I haven't really found any deep spots over there. So I tend to stay, you know, in the east side of Gulf Shores back down to, you know, like I said, I'll go as far over as Dog Beach area, but right here, this is home for me. I love my Perdido area, and there's about three or four spots that I love fishing at. I love Fort Pickens. Fort Pickens is probably my favorite spot, but, you know, to do that and get out to the point or get out to the area that I like to go, it's a long haul when you don't have a really nice deer field cart. So, you know, the four wheel, you know, I don't have one of those carts yet. I told him, I said, I'm going to have one built this year with the whole patriotic WBC setup, but right now I don't. So I've had a mix of carts. To the one that we use now, believe it or not, was a landscape cart that Anna had at the house. And me and Lil Jay hooked it up with our own pole holders, and it fits everything, and we can get it out to the beach as quickly as we can. But it's not ideal, but that's the one we're using right now.
Ingenuity makes everything work.
Yeah. Those big tires, man, they're lifesavers.
Yeah, they are. Well, we nailed into these. We're going to start talking about the brewery. We're going to start talking about all the good things. Well, the mission, what Warrior Beer Company's doing, all that, right after we do another bait check, because it has been 40 minutes and you got to check it again. You don't want to miss that fish because you have bad bait on there. That's not good. This bait check is being brought to you by Kids Can Fish. Head on over to the website, kidscanfish.net, and take a look at all the great things that they're doing. Here you can see through the website, they've got all the information right here. They are a state and federally recognized 501c3 charitable foundation. All the camps and clinics all get funded back in to the organization to help these kids go out and go fish. If you also want information on the Running of the Bulls tournament, it'll be updated right here up on top. And if you want to learn more about the entire team, you can take a look at the pro staff links. You learn all about Caroline, their partners, how to get in touch with them, and the photo gallery is always great. If you'd like to help them further, you can do one more. You can go over to Promar Ahi and take a look at that website, and you can buy into the Castnet. This is the specialized one. This is the one that you hear a lot about. Caroline has talked a lot about it, and a portion of the proceeds go back into Kids Can Fish. They have the 3-foot, the 4-foot, and the 5-foot. All these things are great, and it all goes back into the Kids Can Fish Foundation to help these kids continue to do great things with these camps. Keep your ears open, because there's going to be a lot more things coming from them. It's always great, and always great to be a part of it. All right, so here we are. Warrior Beer Company is in oh my gosh, almost said Perdido. Pensacola, you got it. You got the buildings built. You got the new out buildings built. You've got the hangout area built. You've got the parking area down. You're still growing. I know you have more plans. You've got a lot to do, and you've got a huge piece of land to be able to continue to make so many cool improvements, which is going to be, I am excited to see it grow. So let's start at the beginning. What got you into the beer brewing world?
Well, again, I think, come from an alcoholic family, there was a lot of beer around, and we raced cars, so PBR was always around, so there's beer. But as far as the beer brewing goes, I have some buddies back home in the Maryland, Frederick area and DC area that have breweries. But really what got me into it was the idea of having my own farm brew back home to get vets out working at the farm, being able to come back socially, guys that have been struggling. I did a lot of work with Walter Reed, started a foundation back home called National Warrior Foundation, which I used money from my companies that I had and supported three different organizations back home through that foundation that were doing good work. It was, you know, from Platoon 22, Danny brings awareness to suicide, to building veterans, which were taking guys from that were in some kind of VA program and going into transitional housing. To how I got to Walter Reed was my friend Cindy had Operation Second Chance, which basically was getting guys out on the weekends, doing horseback riding, getting to her place. And then she'd find out that there was need. So she started raising money for, you know, paying bills, paying, you know, getting a washer put in when their washers went out, you know, or somebody was having some surgery done and the family wanted to come, but they couldn't afford to do it. So she'd send them plane tickets so that they could be come to Walter Reed to have, you know, them taken care of. And that's kind of got my, you know, my groundwork of what I wanted to do. Like I said, I was a builder developer. I started a trade division doing lighting projects called CTI, Combat to Impact, professional services. And our goal was to get guys out of that, you know, that rut they may have been in and people not really understanding and respecting them for the service that they had. And then some of the issues that came back from that. And I wanted to put them in a safe spot. You know, they worked as teams before. Why couldn't we put a group together, work as teams? And through that, then I could kind of share testimony to where I got to where I was because of it. And so we did big lighting projects. I did a bunch of about 40 of the Tanger outlets around the country was one of our bigger projects in a national setting. I did the one in Foley, Alabama. That got me to this area back in 2018. I'd never really been to the Gulf Coast. Like I said, we were a racing family. So we grew up on the East Coast. My grandfather actually raced in two of the first Daytona 500s when they were still on the beach. So we were a racing family, like I say, and Daytona was our destination spot every February. It was a vacation time frame wrapped around, you know, us racing our cars. But the brewery came about, like I say, I wanted to start a farm brewery back home. A buddy of mine has a very successful one. I saw the response of the people coming from D.C. So I was in the process of trying to open one in the Frederick area. Then went through a divorce after 30 years of marriage. And it kind of, you know, just kind of took that passion to try to do it their way. And God actually, you know, I pressed into him and said, hey, where can I continue my mission to support suicide awareness? And, you know, I know that this isn't going to be my place. And because I had visited here in 2018, I started looking at if there was any breweries for sale down here, because I loved the idea of making beer that somebody can enjoy, that they could get together with friends and have a good space and just have a good talk and hear laughter. And, you know, it's just, that's kind of the way that I see beer. And that got me here, and that's got me in. I went and became a master brewer myself, and just kind of found a passion of wanted to help, again, back to the core principles here of trying to serve our veteran community and our first responder community, to give them a space to come to. But more importantly, I hope to create, you know, 30 or 40 jobs that wrap around to, you know, and hopefully a lot of those are service-based, retired, part-time or whatever, just so that they have a good safe space to be at, that we can have communication. So.
Nice. How did the name Warrior Beer Company come about?
Well, you know, again, we go back into a little bit of the history of my life. My dad left when I was 12, and I'm the oldest of three. He said, yeah, well, you're the man of the house now. Take care of your mom. And he moved out, moved not far away, but, you know, we didn't have the interactions that we had. And he was, you know, he was an alcoholic. He was a Vietnam guy, and he was very, you know, he was a tough guy to deal with. And, but he had a tough past himself. You know, we're German family in nature, and, you know, there's a lot of that anger that just seemed to stay around and nobody talked about. And so I kind of was an entrepreneur. I had, at eight, I had 150 houses on my paper route. But when he told me that, it took another you know, took another perspective. Okay, well, now I'm going to have to go work at my uncle's gas station. I work with my grandfather on the weekends. I work in my uncle's restaurant. I'll still serve my papers 7 days a week. And I guess through that, I know that we all battle stuff in life. And, you know, God calls us to be warriors. And so that's always kind of sat on me that, you know, I'm going to fight through everything. I'm going to be a warrior. I'm going to be challenged, and that's okay. I'm going to be a warrior. And that's just kind of stuck with me. Like, say, National Warrior Foundation, transitioned to Operation Warrior Ranch, which, you know, we'll basically use that that down here in order to create, you know, I'm still looking for a farm initiative, because even back home when I was hiring veterans for CTI on the weekends, I had a couple farmers that would allow those veterans to come work on the farm to kind of help free their mind by working with animals and planting. We got into CBD. So I started to have, I had two hemp farms back home. So we had them working on the hemp farms because, you know, I know that, you know, I don't believe in the whole pill scenario and getting people so sideways with all the Skittles that they want to give them to, you know, wake up in the morning, go to sleep at night. You know, I want them to have clean minds. And, you know, through that, I was going to try to do whatever I can, because I believe in a strong purpose. You know, God gives us strong purpose individually. And that's what's sort of my conversations with him. So, but the farms, you know, it's just like fishing. You know, I think farming and fishing in a lot of ways, you know, in two different ways, it's hard work when you're farming. Fishing is kind of the easy side of that. But in both perspectives, you know, it's a tie back to nature. And I think when we tie back to nature and we allow ourselves to just kind of think and think in good capacity, you know, having good information around you and people that are willing to support you, you know, those are two very powerful places to be when it comes to be able to see that. And so, like I say, I'm going to have a farm initiative eventually down here, and we'll go under the Operation Warrior Ranch. But warrior is just one of those things. I think that we're all, like I say, we're all battling things. And sometimes, you know, we have to be our warrior on ourselves. But, you know, my goal is that we always have a team around us. And you, thank you for your service. I know we talked about that and continued. You're back in it, you know, in some aspects from a contract standpoint. But, you know, again, we need people. You know, the fishing community is a great fishing community because everybody wants to be around other people and they want to share. I mean, God didn't ask us to be alone, and that's suicide comes from that isolation. So my whole goal here at the brewery is to continue to create opportunities and groupings to where nobody feels like they're alone. They have outlets. So,
and that ties well into the next part we're going to talk about, was what is the mission? I mean, warrior, yeah. you got the ranch, you got the brewery, you've had stuff up north. And you've even said, we've talked about it, and you're like, yeah, this is what we're doing moving forward. You have a mission plan, and you had that all, you have a whole thing put together. So tell us about it, man. What is the mission?
Yeah. I mean, again, we've been, you know, through the opportunity to purchase this property. It used to be Earth Products. It was a landscape property. It was, you know, we have 11 acres here. We delegated 4.5 acres to what the brewery is. And the brewery is it's hard to put it in words when I'm actually now seeing everything that my vision started as. And we just had this building that had all this landscape, and the property was, you know, not taken care of well to what we have now. But basically what I saw, a couple of different things. When I came down here, I love music. I think the other two things that bring people together is art and music, because we all have something that we can look at, we can hear, and then we can have an opinion on, and really nobody can kind of cross you on it, because it's how you see it and how you hear it. But it's always a great conversation point. And so I came down here and I'm listening to music. You know, I'm spending a lot of time in Florida, Mama, the first year, meeting musicians, meeting people. And again, when I left DC, I sold my companies, and this was a God journey. God, just take me where you want me to go with this. You know, my dad took his life as a Navy guy. So suicide and what I do for the last 11 years, 12 years now, has been focused on that. But bring me down here and allow the community to build this property so that is a social outlet. We can get together. We can bring different groups here that have alignment with what our beliefs and our thoughts are. We can raise funds for that group. We can have a beer together. But that's what this is the people's property. I start to see it as. I have a strong vision of what it is, and that vision is around music. It's obviously around really great beer. And then there's another vision that I'm not going to talk about, because it's more of a private vision, but it does go into the safety and the security of people that are in need. And this brewery is going to be able to have that ability to do that through phase two. But the brewery itself at 4.5 acres is about music and beer. And right now we have a small stage, which we've used for the fishing tournament, and we're hyping that one up, and it's going to be built a lot nicer for this one. It's still going to be on the trailer, but it's going to be actually look like a stage, and it's going to perform as a stage. But in the overall project, we actually have a small stage that's inside. That's like 14 by 14. Our building's 7,500 square feet. There's not a property around here that encompasses and allows us to do what we're going to do. And we have 6 roll-up doors that are going to open up to a 24 by 24 stage out back. And this winter, we're going to be building our amphitheater stage out in the field. We have 2.5 acre open field. We're going to build an amphitheater stage there. And that's going to allow us to host, bigger events, be it music or just an event to raise awareness for a cause that we believe in, that we partner with. That's kind of the wraparound. Obviously the mission is based on our, if I say it's our tagline, I don't know that that's, really what it is, but our mission statement is that from feeder fighters to everyday warriors, we got your 6. And that truly is our goal. And that goes back to the battle. We're all battling something, and I want people to know and be aware that there are other people that have either gone through it or gone through it, or want to help support somebody that is going through it. My wife, my former wife, my ex-wife, went through breast cancer, and that kind of separated us, because I got closer to God through the last 15 years of my life, and she got angry at God. And I felt sorry and sad for that, because there were so many signs in her walk during that time that God was there helping every step of it. And she's still here because of some of those steps that she had no part of, but they just happened to be there. And so she still gets to have life. And we have 2 beautiful daughters. Katrina's 31, Shai's 22. I live my life for them. I try to show them what it looks like to be a warrior through, anything that you go through in life. And it's been tough being here, being away from them. They get to come and visit me a lot. And hopefully eventually they'll see how beautiful our paradise is. And they just want to be here with me all the time. But right now I get to see them every once in a while, but they believe in what I'm doing. They understand my faith, has been really strong in supporting and loving and serving other people. They've got to see what that does and how you change people's lives. And I think that's the mission. That should be all of our missions. Obviously our family should be always forefront. We should be able to show what a strong home looks like. And from there, we give out to when we can. And I know you got a full plate. You're way full plated all the time for all that you do for our community and your family. But, yeah.
Sometimes that plate has a hole in it. It's like, well, how did that fall through?
Yeah.
It's amazing the things you can put on your plate when you don't realize what you're doing. But eventually it wins.
I'm gonna drink this Sasso Summer Shandy. It's our Key Lime Shandy.
Oh, a Key Lime. Nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Well, that actually brings us, that's a good tie-in right there. Well done. You didn't even have the questions for that.
I didn't so know where the question, what are the questions?
Well, it's going to be, we'll do the first one and then we'll move into the next one for that. Why beer and not spirits?
So there will be spirits.
Look at you turning it up. Nice, dude. Yeah, congrats.
There's a little secret part to this, but well, it starts with beer, obviously, but I think we use a really cool system called Smart Brew. It's actually out of New Zealand. So we've kind of shortened the timeline of the initial stage of brewing, which is creating the wort. The wort is a boil cycle, which then gets into a little bit more building control, you know, and fire suppression scenarios. But I did it for a different reason altogether. My buddy has a very successful farm brew back home called Vanish, and Vanish will have thousands of people on the weekends. They do amazing beer, and they lose their brewmaster every year and a half, because they do good beer and they think that the brewmaster is the most amazing thing, and somebody comes and gives them an offer and the brewmaster goes down the road. And then that assistant to that other assistant now has to take over, or they have to bring somebody in. But those brewmasters always have their little tweaks. And for me, I wanted our property to be a place where when we create a recipe, along myself, the gentleman who created Smart Brew in New Zealand, Brian Watson, we start and we build our recipes. Those recipes, the wort is then created in New Zealand, in Tennessee, and in Georgia. And between how we bring those wort together, we bring them into our kettles. And from that point forward, the next 18, 21 days, like any other brewery, everything takes place in-house. So short of creating that sugar water, to simplify it, in that 6-8 hour process, everything else is done here in-house. And with that, our system allows everything to be a lot more efficient. I'm just going to spin the camera just so everybody can kind of see that our system right now has 5 of these 10 barrel setups. But eventually there'll be 18 tanks doing the same thing in here as we move down the line. I wanted consistent beer. I wanted to actually take the salaries away from having to have a master brewer and a bunch of assistant brewers. I have a retired Navy guy who is going to be managing our brew house. And I wanted to have consistent beer. We're going to have 12 beers. Right now I have 15 beers on tap ready to go. Some of them are already seasonal beers. We'll have some ciders that'll come in over the next couple of weeks. So when we open, we'll have ciders and we'll have our beers. But the goal was that we're going to have 12 main beers. And whether you come this week, next month, next year, those same 12 beers will taste exactly the same, because of the way that our recipes are built and the way that the system, in a computer controlled way, helps to manage all our set points from temperature and time. And the other part of that is I wanted to be able to take that money and use it to have good staff behind the counters that are open and actually engaging. I can't believe how bad the service industry is down here. That as much as we're in the South and everybody's supposed to have this, I'm from the South and I love everybody nature. When you go to a bar, hey, it's me. I'd like to have a drink. I don't like that. I like the engagement factor that I grew up in. When you come in, you've already been recognized, you know, hey, what can I get you? You know, or I'll be right with you. I can't wait to serve, you know, just with the attitude and the image. And because I'm a personable person, I want that in my staff. So I'm willing to pay a little bit more up front. They'll have amazing tips because we're going to sell a lot of beer. But you got to have that. I like people. And some days we're not going to like people. But you better be faking it when you come on those days, because you have to like people in order for my mission to be held. And that means that we serve other people. And we serve them with love. You know, we serve them in that capacity at all times. And that, you know, part of this process here is I've been to breweries and you stand in line for 10, 15 minutes to get a beer. You're not going to do that here, because of the way that we're processing things and we're doing online apps, to do ordering. So it'd be like the Starbucks of beer. You come over and you put an order and we'll either have a runner come over to the QR spot that you have, or you can come in and pick it up from, you know, this inner bar. But the goal for me is that you came here to have good beer and be with the friends that you came to with. And obviously, and at times it'll be to listen to music, but it's just to go spend time with the people that you have limited time to spend with. You know, we're all busy. So if they have a couple hours to be with their friends and drink a couple beers, I want them to be doing that and not stuck in lines waiting to get a beer. And business-wise, I need 1.3 beers to be sold by every hour by everybody in order for me to make this couple million-dollar project run. So
there is some math involved and required.
100%. Which you've been around a lot of math recently.
I'm so glad that that's over. PEMDAS playing that one. Yeah. Rivet spacing. What are you talking about, man? I got to know angles. I don't want to know angles. I don't want to do sheet metal. That sounds awful.
Was that like a month of training you were doing, though? I mean, all your certifications you just did?
No. So the school was only 2 weeks. I had to, the rest of it was all self-study. So I'd been studying for, I want to say, 3 months. So, yeah, the FAA AMP certification was... It's a beast for a reason. And I discounted it for years. And then I did the whole thing and went through the understanding of it. And I realized, okay, I get it now. Now I understand why it was a beast. Now I understand why you guys do the things you do. And I am so glad that crap's over.
Yeah. But now it just adds a bunch more to your job that you have to do and are certified for. So now you're going to be called on to do more.
One day we'll definitely see where that one takes us. But all right, we'll get you the last set of questions here. Let's knock on our final bait check and we'll get you almost done. You're almost free. Hey, right. Look at that. Time just flies when you're having fun.
It does fly when you're fun with friends.
Yes, sir. This bait check is being brought to you by the Sinker Guy. Y'all know I love it. Go over to thesinkerguy.com and take a look at everything that Chip's got going on in the Sinker Guy Garage. Lots of fun stuff in this website, y'all. I mean, you can get lost in it, really. If you go take a look, you just get right to the homepage here. It's got a little couple of things to talk about, but we go into the good stuff, get into the garage, into the shop. Need sinkers? It's in his name. It's got you covered there. The Bruno rig, the Uno rig, and the Fishing Mortician rig. We all love those. But if you need other supporting gear, he's got you covered with that. Bait, floats, fishing line, so many different things, any kind of other supporting gear. There's a lot on the website. So again, go over to thesinkerguy.com, take a look, get your order in today. Extremely fast shipping, superb customer service, and Chip's going to make sure you're taken care of every time. That's just how he does it. Sinkerguy.com, get your order in today. So one of the fun things that you started talking about there, I mean, you got fishing, business. We're all burning the candle at five different angles at constant intervals. And you've done companies back up in Maryland, DC area, and now you've come here and you've started building this. What has been one of the greatest lessons learned that you've found out after doing all this?
Well, a word that I would never ask God to give me, we used to do this one in our Bible study. We'd like, all right, choose one word that you need to work on this year. And I never chose the word because I knew what happened. As soon as you choose the word, it hits you in the face forever that year.
Yeah.
And that was patience.
Not a patient. I knew it.
I'm not a patient person. Sorry, Dima. I know you think I'm the best person that you ever met in your life, but I'm not patient. And so I got down here, you know, and we bought the property in January, and I'm going to have this thing open by 4th of July. We're going to have this amazing big event around veterans. And I did a lot of fishing and I did a lot of time in Floribama because we couldn't get anything done. We kind of started to fight the system. And I knew that we were in, a small town, maybe a little good old boy network. And, you know, again, that's why I kind of prayed and looked for people to come board and see the vision. But I realized a lot of people didn't want things built over here. You know, this is like the last step of leaving paradise when it came to Florida on this end. And then they built this school behind his, and, you know, their written rule was a little bit different than the actual law that was written. And so we had to go through that process and, you know, end up having to hire an attorney that kind of understood the system a little bit around here and maybe been part of the system. And you know, things kind of started to fall in place. But patience by far is what I learned the most. And but it did, again, it gave me a lot of time to really kind of reflect. I'd never been on my own, you know, all my life. Obviously, I grew up and you have parents, you have family, you're always doing, you know, I got married young. I was 21 when I got married. And so then life is that. You're taking care of your kids. You're taking care of your wife. You're living, you know, and then have another child, you know, 9 years later. You're still trying to do all the things. But I was always, you know, always taking care of people. And when I came down here, it was like the first time being on my own and really trying to reflect back and figure out who I was. You know, I knew I had a big heart. I knew I loved people. I knew that God had brought me here to serve. But I had to really figure out who I was in all that aspect. So I don't know that the brewery was going to be open anyway, because God had to break me down and teach me what it was going to look like to be me and be able to serve the community that I was asking him to do and show me, you know, in a capacity that where I was just open, wide open. And I was going to have to be patient. I was going to have to listen. You know, the whole 2 ears, one mouth scenario, I had a difficult time in life, you know, in business. You know, it was my way. We're going to do this, and that's all we're doing. But I've learned to listen a lot more, so that I can help people in the aspect that, you know, we're asked to. And so patience is getting better, but still I'm not totally 100% patient all the time.
They say it's a virtue. I think it's overrated, but it's required.
Oh, it's so required. And again, I've been gifted with the new relationship, and we, you know, we have scars, and I know that, you know, I don't, you know, I believe in circles and nothing by chance scenarios. And when I met Anna and hearing her tell her 9-year-old or 8-year-old son, a 9-year-old son at that time, you know, here's little Jay, he's the man of the house. And I remember those words being said to me, and that didn't set off, you know, I was supposed to go to the Naval Academy and got in trouble with the law, and that was taken away from me. And it was all because I was trying to be the man of the house and not just being able to be a kid. So we walked that forward, and a month later I explained to her, you know, and little Jay's not the man of the house. He's my son at the house. So she was able to kind of see that and navigate that. But we got to, you know, communication, the key to everything, key to a great relationship with anybody you have is just true open communication. And the greatest part of that is that I told her, you know, I'd gone through some health things when I first got down here with, you know, prostate cancer, pre-prostate cancer scenario, and monitoring that. So that obviously put some cost to it. And, you know, I didn't have health insurance, and she knew what I was going through. And she said, hey, you know, I want to put you on my health insurance as my partner, so you can go ahead and just get tested, make sure everything's right. I did some blood work, and after that blood work came back, some things were off. They did an MRI, and they found out I had a brain tumor. So in December 11th of last year, I had a brain tumor removed. And again, not by chance moments. So Warrior continues to be what it's all about, you know.
It's the proper term.
Yeah. So we're all going to battle something, but we need people in our lives to help us walk sometimes. And it's been a blessing from that point.
Look at you now, kicking ass, living it up, man.
Ready now.
You brought it up before. It was kind of, and we talked about it. It's actually been kind of a running joke, in my opinion. We were going to do the podcast in June. Yeah, we were going to do the podcast in June.
Yes.
For a July 4th opening. and the situation happened, so we're like, okay, cool, no big deal, we'll let it simmer. We were supposed to do the podcast again right before Blaine's tournament,
I was gonna say October. We started talking about, like, all right, we're gonna do it in October, because the tournament,
we're like, all right, yep, everything's gonna open there, we're gonna do it then. Sure enough, another roadblock hit. I think it was my schedule this time. And then it moved into my roadblock, turned into after that your roadblock. And we're like, okay, things are just, we're not there. We're not getting things lined. We finally get the schedules lined up and we're like, okay, maybe it's going to be this one. We had a slight delay, which worked perfectly because you had another delay. And it's like, all right, now we have the podcast recorded. So it makes me wonder, was this the final hurdle? Are we really through this now? Like I can finally drop this one and you're live. Everything is golden. I will love that.
I so believe that we've crossed pretty much all the hurdles. You know, I have a health department inspection that has to happen over here in the next couple of weeks. Little kind of touch-ups for some fire safety stuff. And then it's me, it's my, you know, at least get some of this cosmetic scenario played out. It's not what I want it to be to open, but we have beer. And the important part is getting people out here to just have the ability to socialize. We have an amazing property. We have, you know, between us and the school, there's 26 acres of wetlands. That's never going to change. The beauty of our property, the Blue Angels fly over every Tuesday and Wednesday. You know, it's like when they're practicing, they're here, you know. And to me, that's, you know, that's freedom. That's our nation. That's what we're about. You know, we have the force and the ability to take on and conquer anything, but we also have, you know, some amazing people that serve us to get to this, even to this highest level, to be able to fly the Angels. And they literally look like the wings are touching all the time. I mean, they're just so it's amazing to see. And both of my partners, Joe, who has passed, and his son, Joey, were special ops pilots. You know, Joey's still active in the Air Force. So, you know, we have a mission here around military, you know, and it is our founding. And but just to see the power of a fighter jet flying, you know, directly, you know, I don't know, 100 yards. I mean, they're not even that high up sometimes when they blast through over top of the building. You know, I'm inside and, you know, you hear the vibration of the metal. It's just like it's so awesome to see. I can't wait to have everybody out here seeing what I've got to see over the last couple of years as we started to build this thing. You know, it's definitely been a work, and we're not quite there, but we're going to have people here next month. We're going to have a lot of music. Ties back to that first time when I came down here and I met a friend that became a friend, part of Bangarang Peter, that they started, Renee Amelia. I met her over at Cafe Nola, and we got to talking, you know, and I was telling her what I'm doing. And this was like within the first month that I was here. And I told her, you know, we're gonna have a bunch of music. Oh, I can help you with all the music. I know everybody, you know, and she's an amazing songwriter, amazing talent. Sounds like Janis Joplin. And she said, yeah, so I can tie you into everything. I said, but you know, Renee, there's also a bigger mission for the brewery. You know, we have I run a foundation for veteran suicide. So really that's what the mission is at the brewery. And she started crying. And I said, is everything all right, Renee? And she said, no, it's not. We just lost a friend of ours a couple weeks ago, 10 days before he was supposed to get married to suicide. He was part of a lot of bands here. His name was Elijah Steverson. And, you know, we're hosting an event to try some raise some money for his fiance because it put her in her little spot. Excuse me. And I said, well, I knew my mission then was more than just veteran suicide, veteran awareness of, you know, of that. It was just serving the community that was placed in front of me to share my testimony about my dad's suicide and what comes out of that as a family member and the cloud that follows it around, which it shouldn't, because mental health is around for a lot of people. We don't discuss it. We don't talk about it. And as men, we really try to hide it. But we got to be good friends. And that leaned into founding an organization called the Campfire Fund for Men's Mental Health, who is when, you know, that's the organization that Blaine's tournament has allowed me to support for the last couple of tournaments. And again, they'll be the charity of choice for the Pompano Showdown. This year, they, you know, we have the music on Sunday that's provided by one of the bands that Elijah used to play with. And, you know, it's just a, that important part of finding somebody who was a songwriter then led me into this chapter of like, I'm at Warrior Beer Company and I have this amazing venue that I can start. And everybody I talk to, we're the songwriters of the South, but nobody gets to play their own music. They have to play covers because we're a tourist town and everybody wants to hear covers all the time. And so I said, well, my venue is not going to be that. You want to play covers? I'm not going to tell you you have to play covers. I want to know who you are. I want to hear your music. I want the raw talent of all genres of music. We're not going to get stuck in the country and old rock scenario. I want everybody to have freedom of music over here. So we're actually going to be starting and hopefully it'll kick off May 4th. That's our date right now set, where we're going to do Warrior Beer Live on Saturday nights. And Warrior Beer Live will be audio and video high production. The songwriters that come in and play those days will be able to use it to go ahead and put out to their platforms. We'll do a best of each month where we bring and collaborate. And then when we put ours out, that money will go to the charities that we're supporting, you know, Campfire Fund. We started recently talking with A Hero out of Pensacola, which is a great organization that has multifaceted opportunities for veterans to connect in nature. And Dave Glassman has done an amazing job. He was CO at one point over here at the base. I really haven't tied into all the base, but I know that God has started to place more and more of those cogs in place now. And over the last couple of weeks, it seems like they've all started to show up over here. But that's what this place was supposed to be. It was supposed to be an opportunity for our social groups that can do goodwill to be able to have a place to meet, raise some money, and then send the mission out. Similar to what the church was supposed to be. The church was supposed to, we all get together, we find the mission for this week, we send it out. You know, I don't know if sometimes the capacity of the church is in that alignment, but I feel like the brewery, even though my mom said it's the weirdest church that you ever had, but I think it's the place where we have an alignment, where we can get people together and have an opportunity and a mission, because we're all into missions when we're servants, and we send it out. So that's what Warrior Beer and my property is going to be. And we're going to allow songwriters to be songwriters. And I hope that eventually we become the place that songwriters all around will want to come to, because they know it's their safe space and it's their maybe launching point to allow them to have a career that they don't have to go through somebody else's eyes and lens or somebody's other character to be successful. Because I don't believe, again, going back to God's individual purpose, I don't think that that's how we were always created to go. It just, society allows us, tries to condition us into boxes so that we can't just be who we are. And I'm a very strong proponent of you being who you are. And that's how we interact.
Good stuff, man. Gary, you're doing great things.
Buddy, I love you so much. I'm so grateful that you came to fix my trailer 2 years ago, even though you thought it was a year ago. But
yeah, I have no concept.
You know, you've been a brother since I got down here, and I'm very thankful that you invited me on to your podcast, which is so successful and reaches so many people. Glad to be a part of it.
Well, thank you, man. And I'm definitely trying. It's all we can do, right? Every day. Yeah. So hope for a little bit, try a little bit, and make it all come together. That's all so we good. Can.
Yes.
Well, let's get you the last questions and get you on with your day, because I know you got plenty to do over there. You got
We got to pick some plywood up today.
All right. First of the last two is going to be this. What knowledge would you give to a brand new angler starting out?
I 100%. If you're just starting out, you have to seek the best in this area, you know, and for me, it's you, it's Smitty, it's Blaine. Get with those guys, you know, pay for a half a day and just get out and, let them share with you what it looks like to be a good surf fisher here. We have amazing landscape. We have amazing fishing, but just find out the techniques that work. These guys that do it, you know, they started out the same way that we did as a passion for it. It became, you know, part of a, I know you have a little bit less time on your hands to be able to do it, but I know Smitty and Blaine are, who are my buddies, that, you know, they're are doing it every day, get out with those guys and let them show you what, you know, the inner workings of surf fishing, and just find a passion from them, and then go out on your own and experiment, you know, and use your past to experiment in other ways. But that's how I would say to start.
A solid start. Absolutely. Hiring a guide never hurts, ever, ever, ever. All right, last question. What's next for you?
Well, I mean, getting this place open, that's ultimately what's next. So in the next month, you know, we're going to be opening April 11th for the unfolding weigh-in. I actually have three veterans that are going to play that night, from the time of the weigh-in up until about 10 o'clock, and kind of launch our music scene here at the brewery. Obviously, we have 15 beers. Hopefully, we'll have a couple ciders. Then on Sunday, you know, the Victrollers are going to be playing, as they have for the last couple of tournaments, and volunteering their time. The Campfire Fund will be here, and we'll be doing an amazing weigh-in for the Pompano tournament. You know, I think the last couple of times we've had, you know, 300 or 400 people at both events. I think the spring tournament might even had some more just showing up because we actually had a place that everybody could park. I mean, we do have a good amount of parking here. But, you know, again, I think my next is just that, allowing this thing to walk itself exactly like it was supposed to, how it was intended, and get people here, start sharing the property, the opportunity to be here, and kind of let it just start to take its own, you know, its own walk. You know, I've been pressing into this, what I believed it should be based on what, you know, God has shared with me. But I think it's time now that the property gets kind of moved forward with the people that start to get involved. You know, like I said, music, events, and the opportunity to serve our community is the highest priority for me. And good beer. We have great beer. I think we have the best beer. As a matter of fact, I have the best beer, I think, Gold Star beer. It's actually called the Perdido Vanilla Porter. And it's a vanilla porter, but I left the VA out because most times they leave our veterans out.
That's staying in the show, but I can't say anything.
Hey, they're really good. They're really good when you guys are active. Seems like things go sideways once you get out.
Whole nother episode.
We can talk about that off air.
There you go.
Dude, so one line of things. So this beer right here, the one I was telling you about, the Shanty. So we have America, which is our lager. So good.
Nothing wrong with a good lager.
But this beer here, we have three beers here that are named after us three founding partners. So I have Heffy's Bootyful Blonde, because just happened to have a Bootyful Blonde that I have as a girlfriend. Then we have Eagle Eye, our IPA, which is named after Joey, which is his call name. And then this one is Sasso's Summer Shanty. This is that key lime shanty. This will honor Joe and the life and the opportunity that he gave for us here. And proceeds from it will go back to his two young daughters and, you know, to help probably fight pancreatic cancer. Again, we're a mission-based brewery. We're always looking for ways that we can help and support. Obviously, I didn't plan on losing a partner before we could get open, you know. But because of Joe and Joey and the belief that we have, we all became, you know, partners in this. And we are where we are because we believe in the mission. And they believed in the mission. And they still do. Joey still does. So.
Well done.
That's what's next.
That's good stuff, man. Well, thank you so much, Gary, for coming on. Thanks for all that you do. I appreciate it, man. And it's just going to be great to see it grow and continue on. And everybody, for those of you listening to, don't forget, take a look. Well, there'll be lots of links back, and you'll be able to follow them all on social. You'll know when the events are happening. You'll know when things are coming. It'll all pop up. We'll make sure of that, too. But, Gary, thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. I love you, man.
Love you, man. I'll see you later.
All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that has been the episode today for Finding Demo Surf Fishing. I hope you enjoyed it. there's, like I said, Gary's got a ton of things really going really well right now. And Warrior Beer Company is going to be doing great things in the future. So if you're in the Pensacola area and you want to come by, you won't regret it. Add it to your list of places to stop when you come through here. You will just do the right thing. You know what you need to do. All right. Other than that, take care of yourselves. Thanks for everything you did. Share this out. Get all the good knowledge out there. Do good things. You've been listening to Finding Demo Surf Fishing. I'm out of here.